Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, everybody. This is Joe.
And this is Lizzie from Hailstorm.
And you are listening to...
Talking Metal.
Yeah!
Mark Striegel, John Astronomy, the Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly. Here's your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal, coming to you from a bar on 42nd Street between 7th and 8th. How you doing, John?
I'm doing good. We are switching it up from our usual Starbucks location, which is on 45th Street, and we are now down on 42nd, where we've done a few podcasts, but now we are at a Mexican restaurant.
Yes, Talking Metal Toast. I'm drinking a mango margarita. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a vodka and cranberry.
You were drinking it. It looks like it's gone.
Yeah, it's gone. Now I'm going to switch to some Pepsi.
All right, cool. Let's get into a little music. But first, guys, please stay tuned. We have Hailstorm, the interview, the astronomy interview conducted in York, PA, right?
Absolutely. It was at the fairgrounds. And the cool thing about doing the interview with Hailstorm in York is that they are from Red Lion, PA, which is just outside of York. So it was a hometown show for them, Grammy-winning artist, and I hung out with Lizzie and Joe. And I later ran into RJ, the drummer. But a great, great time, great interview, and great concert.
Excellent. Let's get back to some old school heavy metal with Sweet Savage. This is Killing Time.
Was a little Sweet Savage featuring Vivian Campbell. I was just looking at a picture of Vivian today with all his hair, and I was thinking about how he is battling a sickness right now. And
he just announced on Facebook he had his last chemo treatment.
wow, great news, and let's hope. And it sounds like everything is going well for Vivian, so that's a good thing. Speaking of British heavy metal, speaking of old-style British heavy metal, you just interviewed Dennis Stratton on the last podcast. What a cool thing.
Yeah, Dennis, of course, also a part of the new wave of British heavy metal scene, along with guys like Vivian Campbell and Phil Collin, for that matter, too. And Dennis gave us a great interview. I'm going to give a little disclaimer. I said this in the last podcast, and then I ended up editing it out because I didn't think it was that noticeable. But I'll let you guys in on a little secret. Dennis and I weren't actually talking live together. He wanted me to email him the questions and then edit in my audio questions to him. So I could tell, but I played it for a friend of mine. They were like, no, you can't tell, so don't edit out. Because after the interview on the original version of the podcast John and I recorded, I actually said that, but I just pulled that out. So just a little peek behind the curtain here at Talking Metal. I've never done an interview like that. It was kind of odd. But Dennis is a great guy and said some great stuff. I'm actually surprised the podcast didn't get a little more traction online. I thought he said some crazy stuff, like almost implying that he was the guy who brought Harmony Leeds to Iron Maiden.
Yeah, that, and he also said he didn't get along with Rod Smallwood because he hung out with Kiss too much, and he hung out with the crew and a bunch of different things. And I like he told the stories, and even remembered that like Paul and Gene took him out to eat and hung out with him when Iron Maiden was touring with Kiss, back when Kiss still wore their makeup.
Yeah, said he preferred hanging out with Kiss and their crew, and also Iron Maiden's road crew, over hanging out with Iron Maiden, which is interesting, and something that was documented in Iron Maiden's book, Run to the Hills, the official autobiography, which if you haven't read that, that's a great book. I personally believe that the Harmony guitars, as well as most things that Iron Maiden did, were probably Steve Harris's idea. Now, that's not to say that they weren't doing the Harmony guitars before Dennis joined, but in my mind, probably Steve brought Dennis to the band in order to help the Harmony guitar sound that he was envisioning in his head, which I'm sure Dennis helped create, no doubt about that. But everybody who was involved in that first Iron Maiden, I think Iron Maiden record, helped launch the sound of what became the traditional Iron Maiden sound over the years, if that makes any sense. And,
little interlude. And I usually don't talk about other guitar companies, but I did want to mention this because it has something to do with Maiden. Ibanez has reissued the Destroyer. The Destroyer was an Explorer copy originally, and then it became slightly shaped a little differently in the 80s. It became Destroyer 2. And you metal fans will know that Adrian Smith used to use one, I believe, and Phil Collin had a black one that was kind of known as the Phil Collin model, even though it was just really a three-pickup Destroyer 2. And the neat thing is, in the current ad, the type is in Maiden-style lettering.
Ah, that's great. And perfect segue, actually, because I wanted to mention Phil Collin recently had surgery on his hand, so we hope he's recovering well. And also, speaking of Dennis Stratton, Iron Maiden had two guys in mind when they let Dennis Stratton go from Iron Maiden that they wanted to replace Dennis. One was Adrian Smith, who Dave knew, Dave Murray had played with previous, and the other was a hot young guitar player that Steve Harris had his eye on, Phil Collin.
Wow.
So those were the two go-to guys that they had in mind to replace Dennis Stratton. And obviously, Adrian is the one who ended up with a job. I do believe, according to their official book, that they asked Adrian first, and Adrian accepted. And if he would have said no, because I think they had asked him previously, and he had said no because he had his own band going on. But after Dennis left, Maiden had obviously propelled itself up and was in with their fan base and stuff and was doing quite well, so it was probably very hard for Adrian to say no at that point. But if Adrian said no for some reason, they were going to approach Phil Collin.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. Now, I have a question, and I used to know the answer to this, but I'm sure that you probably haven't forgotten this. Now, Adrian left Maiden for a while, and they got Yannick, and then Adrian returned, and now they have three guitar players. So tell the listeners and me how that happened.
I think I don't know how it happened. I think he was burnt out. You know, he left, and I don't know if he was looking to do a different style of music or do more of his own music or what. I would have to review the Iron Maiden book to see what his reasons for leaving was. But I know, you know, they had toured so extensively through the 80s that those guys were really burnt out. And there was also some friction, I do believe, about songwriting with, and I know Bruce Dickinson had been disappointed that a lot of his songs had not been used. It's right around that time that things like weren't as hunky-dory as they once were in the Maiden camp. We saw Adrian leaving after Seventh Son. We saw Bruce leave a few years after that. And before Bruce left, he did, of course, his solo record, Tattooed Millionaire, with Yannick. So it's funny how all this stuff ties together. Let's keep going here, and let's get into a little Hailstorm and then possibly into the interview, right? You want to set this up? Maybe we'll play Freak Like Me and get into the interview.
Definitely. And let me say thanks to everybody who helped put this interview together, and special thanks to Lizzie and Joe. They were great. It just was a really, really fun day. Hooked up with the band before the show backstage, then went out front and watched the show. My good friend Josh Gardner actually went up in the pit and took photos as the official Talking Metal photographer for the show. And we're going to also post those in a special photo gallery on TalkingMetalDigital.com, TalkingMetal.com, and that's great, and thanks to Josh for that. But we had a great day. We watched the show. We hung out at like a carnival-type atmosphere. There was a guy selling some Kiss and Ozzy paraphernalia. It was kind of cool. Some cool shirts and stuff. I actually didn't buy anything, but it was fun. And it was all in all a great time. And then after the show, we went backstage again for the second time. And I had a drink. I had a beer or two in this little hospitality room. And they had, like, cookies and, like, this was what they had. They had cookies, and then they had beer, and then they had the hard liquor. So it was pretty funny. It was great. It was, like, what a cool thing that they did. RJ, the drummer, came back and hung out for a little bit. And Hailstorm was so cool that they went out by their bus. And for people who didn't even have backstage passes, you could just go and hang out by their tour bus. And they were, like, taking pictures and hanging out with everybody. And then later they came back and hung out with their family and friends who were hanging out in the hospitality room. So it was cool. Lizzie's father, Lizzie and RJ's father, was hanging out with their mother, and he was once the bassist of Hailstorm back in the early days, so that was a pretty neat thing. And everybody has known that Tom Kiefer then came out for the Hailstorm encore, and they did a couple of songs together, which was pretty cool. So that was fun. One really funny thing that happened, I will tell you after the interview, and it didn't have anything to do with Hailstorm, but it had something to do with the Tom Kiefer crew. So why don't we hear the track, Freak Like Me, and then get right into the interview with Lizzie and Joe.
Underground, but we will not surrender. We're gonna give them something to Hey, it's John Astronomy here on Talking Metal with Grammy Award-winning artists Lizzie and Joe from Hailstorm. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, man. I love your name, John Astronomy.
Yeah, we're doing great, man. Happy to be here.
I started to think that the astronomy name is a little hokey now, but I kind of use it anyway.
You gotta roll with it.
Yeah, we after a few years of being Hailstorm, we're like, well, that's a bit of a weird hokey name, but we kept it anyway. So.
Well, I think it's great. It works perfectly for you guys. So I want to talk about when you guys got signed back around 2005. And do you guys remember the gig at Don Hills that you did where I know you guys had some label people come down?
Remember all those. We were playing there every month. We played it the first time. We were showcasing for this little label that was interested in us. And that never worked out. But Don saw us and he's like, I have to introduce you to my lawyer, you know. And come back and play next month. So we played next month, and the lawyer's like, come back in 2 weeks. I'll take you to some labels, and we'll set up another show at Don's. We're like, okay. So we went back and played Don's again. And so we first met the Atlantic people. And then they're like, well, can you guys play again next month? And we're like, sure, you know. And we did it like three or four more times every month. More people from the label would come out and check us out. And it was like this whole long courting process. But it was really, you know, Don that got it, started rolling for us to get signed. It was cool.
Wow, that's great. And, you know, I was so sad to hear that just unexpectedly one day Don passed away. But.
We were so upset about that. And you know, because it was very unexpected. And every time we would go and visit New York City, we would try to, you know, go and see him. And we'd hang out, have a couple drinks, some whiskey or whatever. It was usually an epic night, you know. But yeah, so it was just one day it was, you know, we just got the call. And just he was such an integral part of us making that next step.
Yeah, he was definitely a great guy. So you guys got signed in 2005. You came out with an EP first before you guys did your full-length album. Now, how did that happen?
We were different than most bands. We didn't get signed because we had a good demo or anything, you know, or we got signed because of our live show. And we had already done over 1,000 shows ourselves here in Central PA, Maryland, Delaware. And, you know, the A&R guy at Atlantic Lead Lust, he was like, you know, he just really dug it and he thought he saw something for, you know, that we could work with. So, and since the live show was our strength, you know, he was like, well, I got an idea. Why don't we just do a live EP, you know? And it actually worked. I'm so glad we did. It saved us with the label because we went out on the road in the beginning of 06, and I think we sold like 20,000 of them in a few months. Just we'd sling out like 400 or 500 a night at these shows, you know? And it saved our butts when we were trying to get the record together, and the music industry was dropping everybody and anybody, and I know we were on a cutting block, and they're like, well, any band that can sell 20,000 of these EPs, maybe we should, you know, at least try something right. with, you know, and so thank God we did the EP, you know, it was we're lucky in that sense that we had a good idea.
We have a great team, and I think it's a constant thing. Like, you know, you have these companies that want to invest in you, and you want to invest in them for what they can do that you can't do. So, but it is a constant state of proving yourself and making sure that everybody's on the right page. And you know, the great thing about the label is that they've let us, you know, they've given us like that room to really find ourselves and keep moving. And sometimes we have to literally say to them, like, you know, there is such a thing as too much creative control. Can you please advise us? Is this the right idea? You know, so they're good peeps. They are.
Very cool. So you guys have been nonstop touring, probably 200 to 300 gigs a year.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we're going to clear like 300, I think, this year, right?
Yeah, we just kind of, we like playing and we have, you know, a lot and traveling and it's, the road is kind of our home, you know, and we're surrounded by good people and is our road family and we love it. Everyone has a good time and if it wasn't fun, it wouldn't be worth it, you know, but we just have such a good time and it's fun to watch the crowds grow and you know, never gets old, the adrenaline rush of being on stage.
You know, I saw in another interview that you said, Joe, that you're going to be on tour until like sometime next year, this particular tour.
Pretty much this. Yeah, we go home at the end of this month for a week and a half, and then we go to Europe for 5 or 6 weeks. And then we have a few days off, and then December, we do the December run. And then looks like we're going to, you know, we're going to start working on our record, and then we're going overseas for most of spring. So there might be a little bit of time in January off. I'm not sure. We don't know yet. But, yeah, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to writing new music, you know, and getting in the studio mood.
Where's home for you guys now?
Just recently moved to Nashville, actually. So just more central location. Buses come out of there. We have a warehouse out there. We have a studio out there. So it's a...
We were moving... All our gear was going there anyway because the bus always comes out of there, and it was saving us a bunch of money just to locate our gear there. And we happened to come across this place that had a decked out studio in the home, and we're like, that's pretty cool. screw it, let's see what that's about and try that. We haven't been there that much yet, but we'll be checking it out. It'll be fun.
Good deal. I know that you guys have done some stuff with guests in the past, like Wolfgang Van Halen. And do you guys plan to record with any other special guests on the new recordings? And I also want to follow it up with, I heard that you guys are doing a cover record.
Yeah, we have our Reanimate 2 coming out in October. It's be our second cover EP. And it's got some cool songs. And I don't know when the press release is going to come out. It should be out any day, but we're actually getting the last mix in. It's probably in our email right now. But yeah, it's cool, man. We hit up some 70s and some 80s and some today.
It's fun. And to answer your first question, I mean, like I love doing duets with people. We are very lucky to have some awesome friends right now. And so you never know. Like we don't have anything in the works right now, but that kind of stuff, including the Wolfie Van Halen thing, usually kind of happens on a whim. Like, hey, you want to do this? Sure. So.
Very cool. I was watching my favorite TV show, Bar Rescue, and suddenly I see you guys, and I thought it was the coolest thing. Tell us about that. And how did that happen?
I don't even know how it really came about.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but our management calls like, you guys want to be on Bar Rescue? We're like, sure. And it was actually really cool. We flew in, and the station, the production company leaked it to the local station, and there's like a few thousand people showed up, and the place held like 50, you couldn't fit anyone in there, and there's this huge line outside, and it got really crazy, and there was a lot of disappointed people, which was a bummer, because a lot wanted to come in, and it kept getting pushed back. We didn't even get to play till like midnight. We did like two or three songs, and we felt bad because, it was a TV production, so you're running on it. It wasn't a concert,
We squeaked in a couple more songs just for everybody that showed up, but almost got in trouble. But yeah. But it was worth it, I feel like.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was great. It looked great. From a TV production background, it looked great, the final product. So it was very cool. Now, Lizzie, you have a signature Gibson Explorer.
Gibson approached me at, which NAMM was that, 2 years ago?
Two or three years ago,
at the NAMM convention in Anaheim. They approached me. They're like, we really want to do a guitar with you. And, of course, my initial reaction was, like, looking behind me, like, is Slash behind me? Who are they talking to, they were uber excited. I mean, obviously, I've been a Gibson girl forever. And so I kind of already had my ideas because they're like, take a few months and, like, figure out what you want to do. I'm like, I'll have it in your email box tomorrow. So they were really excited to do it for me. I did a standard Explorer because I love the way that they do Explorers. And I didn't really want to screw with it too much. So, it's standard pickups. What I really did was just cosmetically just make it into this, what I call a classy bitch, because it's got this classic metal, shape to it. But I ended up taking a lot of inspiration from actually the Fender Gretsch, where it's the White Falcon. So it's got gold hardware. It's double bound, bound neck, pearl and gold hardware. But it plays like just amazing, and it's my go-to guitar right now for in any situation. So it feels like home.
Well, I love it. Now I wanted to ask you, in the Love Bites video, you're playing a Les Paul, and it's got, was that a Kaler on it?
That's an old that was a gift from a guy that works at a station up in Connecticut.
Is it 81?
It's an 81 Silverburst, yeah. Les Paul custom with the year that you wanted, and it was a factory installed Kaler on there.
Yeah,
and
good friend of ours ended up coming, to a show, and he put out this guitar, and he's like, I really want this to have a good home. And he's like, her name is Hope, and I really want it to be played and displayed. So,
she's to be on stage.
So yeah, so I told him, I said, well, I'm gonna put it in the Love Bites video, and so you'll have that.
And you'll have it out on stage. It's in the middle of getting refretted because the frets were a little too worn down to really be all that playable. So it's taken, for some reason, a freaking year and a half. We've just been on the road so much. Every time we go back, it's not quite done because our guitar tech is doing it off the road. And I think we'll have it hopefully by the December run. So we can start playing it then because it sounds awesome.
It does. It's got such a cool tone. I mean, obviously, anything with that history, I mean, it just sounds unlike any of my other Les Pauls. But I'm getting quite a lot of Les Pauls.
Yeah, you have a nice collection.
I have like six now?
That's a lot.
It's terrible. It's a terrible addiction. Terrible.
You know what I think are nice is the classic customs. They may be now called the custom classics, but it's basically a custom where the front has multi-ply binding, but the back doesn't have binding like a standard. So those are kind of cool. They're Gibson USA, so they're less expensive than the custom shop models.
That's cool.
I really want one of those collector series, or the collector, what are they called? Like, I can't remember the exact name of it, where they took like they take like 59 bursts and remake them perfectly. You know, yeah. Like they have like collector something number two and number three.
Right.
And they're so cool looking.
Guys, I really appreciate it that you guys took the time out again for the second time to hang out with Talking Metal. I've always been rooting for you guys for a couple of reasons. One, because I'm also a PA guy, so it's great to see another hometown, you know, group of musicians do great. But also because I was there back in the old days at one of the Don Hills gigs doing it with you guys. So congratulations on everything.
It's a pleasure to be with you, man. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. You know, we're just goofballs. We talk about this stuff anyway. So it's an honor. Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And thanks for the Ace Frehley book.
Yeah,
can't wait to read it.
You guys are going to love it.
Hey, everybody. This is Joe.
And this is Lizzie from Hailstorm.
And you are listening to
Talking Metal.
Yeah!
We could just go home right now. Or maybe we could stick around for just one more drink. Oh, yeah. Get another bottle out. Let's shoot the shit. Back down for just one more drink. Oh, yeah. Here's to us. Here's to love. All the times that we fucked up. Here's to you. Fill the glass. Cause the last few days have kicked my ass. So let's give them hell. Wish everybody well. Here's to us. Here's to us. Stuck it out this far together. Put our dreams through the shredder. Let's toast, cause things got better. And everything could change like that. And all these years go by so fast. But nothing lasts forever.
Cool. What you just heard was John's interview with Hailstorm, Lizzie and Joe from Hailstorm, and you heard Slash with Hailstorm playing the song Here's to Us. Again, Here's to Us by Hailstorm featuring Slash. Go to iTunes and buy the full-length versions of all the songs you hear on Talking Metal. So, you were going to mention another story, John, and then I want to give a shout-out to a couple other Talking Metal listeners.
What was that?
So, John, you were going to mention one more story, you said, I think, before the interview, and then we are going to give a shout-out to a couple Talking Metal listeners.
Yeah, what was funny is I'm backstage in that hospitality room, and some guy comes in, and it turns out he was Tom Kiefer's guitar tech. He was a really, really cool guy, and we've kept in touch. And he comes up, and RJ comes up, and he goes, are you the guy with Ace Frehley? And he was talking to the other guitar tech, and he goes, no, he is. And somehow somebody must have known that I had done something with Ace. And so what happened is me and the guy are talking, and he goes, this is prior to him knowing that I work with Ace. He's like, man, I just saw Ace out in Detroit. And he goes, let me tell you, it was the most awful thing I've ever seen in my life. And
I go, what, Detroit? That was a great show. I said, we were right by the water. I go, that show? And he's like, yeah, oh, my God. And then somebody goes, oh, that's Ace's assistant. And he's like, wow, I'm really sorry. He's like, I can't believe I said that. Oh, my God. He's like, oh, I did like the book. And but anyway, it was really funny. And I was like, no worries. I was just, like, very surprised. And I told him, I said, I'm surprised you thought that wasn't a good show. I thought that was a great show. I mean, I admit some shows are better than others, but I thought that one was a killer show. So I don't know what was what he didn't like about the show, but I thought it was really cool. So anyway, that was a funny story. And he's since kept in touch. I got to give him a call back because I've just been so jammed up. I haven't called anybody back. I did talk to Rob Dukes the other day, which I'll fill you in on. And but anyway, I've just been really, really busy. And
I know Rob had been texting me trying to get in touch with you, so I'm glad to hear you guys connected finally. Hey, we got a nice PayPal donation. Why don't you give a shout out to this guy here?
This goes out to Robert Bear, and he gave us a killer donation. And man, Robert, thank you so, so much for doing this. We can't thank you enough for doing it, and you listeners keep us going, because guys, we don't get paid by anybody to do this. We, you know, occasionally have a sponsor, but we just do this for you guys and for us because we have a fun time doing it. It makes us feel like we're talking to you. And I want to send this one out to Robert, and he wants to hear some Sean Baker.
Yeah, let's get into that right now. A little Sean Baker for Robert, who wrote in, Talking Metal Rules, love the show. If I earned a request with this donation, I'd love to hear 7-0 by Sean Baker Orchestra. Thanks for all the time you put into the podcast. Rock on, Rob. Thank you, Rob, for the great, generous donation. Heard was 7-0 by Sean Baker Orchestra. Go buy that on iTunes. A big thanks to the Talking Metal listeners for everything you guys do for us. And we wanted to give a little shout out right now to our sister podcast, Talking Rock. It is back and running strong. So go subscribe to Talking Rock. There's a new interview up with Hugo from Tantric, who was managed by Bill O'Coin, who once managed Kiss. We actually talk about Bill O'Coin during the interview, so definitely go check that out on the Talking Rock feed or on talkingmetal.com in the Talking Rock section. Derek posted on Facebook, "Hey guys, I just recently found your podcast and spent the better part of the past 2 days listening to it. It's cool hearing how band life is for the big and famous, and gives me something to look forward to as I am a musician as well, even if I'm a sucky one." Well, I'm sure you're not that bad, Derek. "And love the interviews and love the podcast. You got a fan for life." Well, thanks for checking in with us, Derek, on Facebook. And guys, you can check out our official Facebook page and get involved with the conversation there. John and I will be touching base with you guys all on the Facebook and the Twitter, which is, the handle is just simply Talking Metal, one word. All right, so we'll wrap things up here. We've heard some great music. We're going to wrap up with a little old school Bruce Dickinson before he was in Iron Maiden. This kind of ties in with the whole Maiden theme from earlier in the episode. And I guess that'll about do it for today. I'm losing my job, guys, so if you're ever going to make a donation, now's the time. Last week is next week, and I'll be hopefully pulling in some sort of income. I'm a little nervous about it. Maybe it'll mean more podcasting. I don't know. Anyways, John, why don't you take us out?
This is Vice Versa by Samson from 1980, and this features Bruce Dickinson, who I once ran into on the streets of Johnstown, PA. Things to a style.